I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
It's Tuesday, the 2nd of June. I'm Andy Brassel, he's Marcus Speller, and this is Jules and Andy on Football Ramble Daily. Coming up, we've got a date for the return of the EFL Championship, which is huge, but not everyone's super happy about it. We also look at football's reaction to the George Floyd protests in the United States with Jadon Sancho's message in the aftermath of one of his goals for Dortmund, making headlines all over the world. We ask, are young footballers more prepared to stand up and be heard on social issues? Yes, Jules under the weather today, unfortunately, so not with us. We're sending lots of love and good vibes to her for a swift recovery, and I'm sure you'll join us in echoing that. Ramblers. So we've got Marcus Speller, who has gallantly stepped in. It's great to have you here, Marcus. How are things?
Oh, hello, Andy. I'm doing very well, thanks. It's lovely to chat to you. Shame about Jules, but sure she'll be back and better than ever very, very soon. But yeah, pleasure to be here.
And she has put us in the awkward position of me being in your chair and you being in my chair. We've got a bit furniture confused. This is not normally the way it rolls in the mailbag, is it? But no. It's been a busy week in football, and we had confirmation on Sunday night of the return of the Championship. And you love a bit of Championship, I know that for sure.
Very much so, Andy. Yeah, I do like the Championship. My team, Fulham, are down there. And I've been seeing Fulham a lot this season. And the Championship, it's a great league. We can all agree. And there's been a lot of chat, of course, from Championship sides about whether, you know, it'll come back and so on and so forth. Because much of the attention has been on the Premier League for obvious reasons. It's the big football league in this country, of course, and around the world. But we shouldn't forget about the Championship. And certain sides have been very vocal in what they think, you know, likes of Leeds United and so on and so forth. But there have been some other sides, of course, like QPR, who have reacted quite strongly to this information that we heard that the Championship will be back on the 20th of June, Andy.
Yeah, they have. And we thought we'd get an expert to see us across it all. So I spoke earlier to Ian Danter, who's TalkSport's lead commentator for the Championship and for the EFL. We started by asking him if there was any significant doubt for him that the Championship would return at some stage.
Well, I think, Andy, there seemed to be the collective bargaining of the Championship seemed a little more unified than it has been, certainly in League One, the division below, where there's all sorts of shenanigans going on there. League Two appears to be fairly unified in what they want to do. But with the Championship, I think the main problem has come since this announcement that June the 20th is the restart date, and there's two or three clubs who have been suddenly, you know, caught off guard, it seems, by the EFL's announcement, QPR being one, Stoke City being another, and Charlton very unhappy at the speed with which it's being brought back. I think everybody wanted to complete the season. I just think that those clubs didn't want it to be quite as soon as June the 20th for a restart. I think even 1 week would have placated Mark Warburton and QPR, but that doesn't seem to be the case. This appears to be the way things are. But I, generally speaking, I think that the intention is, has certainly been from the Championship to try and get things done.
So you talked about the different needs of the Championship compared to the other sections of the EFL, the League One and League Two. How much of a challenge do you think it's been for Rick Parry and the EFL to deal with all of this, given their very different needs and their very different stances on whether the season should continue or not?
I think Rick Parry has actually come out of this with a great deal of credit, because the EFL generally has come in for an awful lot of criticism for the way they've handled and are still handling disciplinary issues. You look at the Sheffield Wednesday ongoing, you know, points deduction potential that Sheffield Wednesday could get, and how long it's taken to get a hearing for these accusations of, you know, about the Chancery Group and purchasing the stadium and whatnot. And you think back to last season and the sheer length of time it took for Birmingham City to get their 9-point deduction for their, you know, profit and sustainability issues that they were banked to rights for. But it seemed to take an eternity for the EFL to get a hearing and get everything cleared up. And in the midst of all this, Rick Parry's come in as a chief executive. And let's not forget, we're in a time in English football where there's such a state of flux, not even disregarding the pandemic for a moment. You know, we've been looking at Richard Masters coming in as the Premier League chief exec. What's going on at the PFA? Is Gordon Taylor going to lose his seat? You know, the FA and the EFL, there's room at the top for new people to come in and try and exert their authority. And I think Rick Parry has a certain calm authority about him. He's certainly not a confrontational figure, Andy, I don't think. And he's trying to pull all these different factions together. And the self-interest is evident in any division, in any country, when a pandemic has reared its head and you're trying to get a restart and some want the season null and voided, some want just a playoff campaign. I think he's been relatively skillful in the way that he's kept 24 very, very different clubs kind of unified. It'd be impossible to have this utopian vision where everything goes along with everything he says at this time. But I think he's done a pretty good job, Andy.
Yeah, I mean, when you talk about the different needs of the clubs, even in the Championship, I mean, that's something we've really seen in League One the most. We've got some enormous clubs that want to get out of that, including, I guess, Sunderland and Portsmouth, and for that reason, they don't want to the season to end for that reason and to miss out. But if we talk specifically about the Championship, is that diversity you talk about the problem? Because, you know, it's sort of front-loaded by teams who are given everything and risking everything in some cases to get themselves back in the Premier League. Whereas if you look at, we'll come to Barnsley in a minute, but in the case of, say, QPR and Stoke, and Hull were one of the first teams to come out, I think the first team to come out and say, we don't want the season to resume.
Yeah.
Does it feel for them like they're kind of going through the motions at great cost if they can't really do anything with the rest of the season?
Well, the thing with the Championship is there are so few teams in it who have no experience of the Premier League. There are so few. I mean, you know, Luton Town spring to mind immediately, and Preston and Bristol City, and Millwall. But apart from that, most teams in the Championship have spent at least one season as a Premier League club, and I include Barnsley in that. And that does bring, Andy, a certain sense of entitlement, whether that entitlement comes from the boardroom or whether it comes from the stands or even from management. You know, they have this thing, if a manager like Stendel takes a job at Barnsley, he's informed, this is what happened when, you know, Neil Redfern's Barnsley team got to the Premier League. And that brings its own pressures, I think. And you look at a team like Hull City, who've, you know, in danger of sliding into the third tier. They've had their glory days in relatively recent times as a Premier League side. That's a clear case to me of self-interest, and the Alarm family has not covered itself in glory in many aspects of football club ownership, Andy. I think it's fair to say since they've been in charge of the Tigers. So you look at each individual case of those that are, shall we say, complaining about the return of the Championship, and the only one that interests me in terms of the sheer volatility of the complaint is QPR, who are neither one thing nor the other, stuck in mid-table, 50 points. I can't see them getting relegated. I can't necessarily see them getting involved in the playoffs, although they're only 6 points off the top six. But for them to be as vociferous as they have been about not wanting to restart on June the 20th, maybe that's not quite about self-interest so much as it is maybe just about a sense of principle. And senses of principle are all too rare in football these days.
Well, talking of principle, what about the Charlton situation? I mean, Lee Bowyer was on TalkSport earlier this week talking about how some of his players had refused to play. And obviously that's going to be a massive pain for him with them fighting against the drop, especially when one of them, Lyle Taylor, is the guy who scores the goals. But
well, you know him well, of course, from his AFC Wimbledon days, you know, and 11 goals.
Exactly.
11 goals in 22 games speaks volume. That, you know, when you're in the bottom three and you've got a guy that's got that sort of goal return, you'd be desperate to keep him. I actually thought, listening to Lee yesterday on TalkSport, speaking about this situation, not just with Lyle Taylor, but also with Chris Solly and with David Davies, I actually thought he trod a very diplomatic line. He could see why it was that Lyle Taylor was in the position he felt he was in, where he didn't want to risk an injury that would scupper a big move to a club. Because obviously this club sniffing around him, he wouldn't make this decision were he not aware that there were Premier League clubs desperate for his signature. So I feel a little bit for Lee Bowyer. It's not like he's had enough to deal with Roland du Châtelet and the whole furore over his contract last summer and whether he was actually a goner, and then he finally signs a new deal. And even with du Châtelet's time being over at Charlton, they're still... Well, they're in the brown stuff, aren't they? They're in the bottom three, and he's got to try and find a way to navigate through this without... Certainly, I mean, Solly's a player I've admired for a very, very long time on the right-hand side for Charlton. So it's going to be very, very tough for him to navigate his way through. But all he can hope is that teams like Hull City, who are just above them, continue on the shambolic run that they've been on, because Hull have only got one win in 11. But yet, as you've spoken about, Andy, when I've heard you talk about the Bundesliga, the form book may have absolutely no bearing in terms of what was going on before lockdown, in terms of what happens post-lockdown. You can look at Hull with one win in 11, but with a three-month break, that could mean diddly squat, really. It's just how well prepared these players are for the restart and whether they're ready to hit the ground running.
Ian Danter there, TalkSport's lead commentator for the Championship and the EFL, which can sate all your Championship needs when it does make its way back on June 20th. So that'll be interesting to see how it all unrolls. What we were saying at the end there, Marcus, about the international excitement over the Championship and very enthusiastic commentators, the one that always sticks in my mind, I was back in England from France by this point, but rewatching the French highlights of that Watford versus Leicester playoff game, you know, where Knockhart misses the penalty.
Yeah.
That is the most dramatic end to a football match that I've ever been to. It was extraordinary. People were jumping up and down in the press box. It was extraordinary, and it doesn't really translate to TV in quite the same way. But when Troy Deeney, you know, scores his goal, takes his shirt off, and jumps into that sort of moat down by where his friends and family are. And from where we were sat, it just looked like he jumped and just completely disappeared into the core of the earth. And people were like, oh my God, what's happened to Troy Deeney? Something terrible's happened to him. But I remember rewatching the French highlights of it and people were going absolutely bonkers. It's not reasonable to say that that is your standard ending for any sort of football match, but it is kind of a reasonable window into how exciting and unpredictable the championship can be, right?
It really is. I mean, when you say that about sort of incredible ends to matches and teams going for promotion and so on, I remember a few seasons ago when Middlesbrough were on the march and they came to Craven Cottage, and Fulham were 3-0 up or 3-1 up. They had a good lead, and Middlesbrough were throwing it away. They needed to win the game, and they got it back to 3-3. And I was actually with a friend of mine who's a Middlesbrough fan, and the Middlesbrough fans were incredible that day. And they were spurring the team on so much. And they made this incredible comeback to 3-3 with just a couple of minutes left. So absolutely incredible. I don't think Fulham had that much to play for in that particular game on that season. And the Middlesbrough fans were going absolutely crazy. And then, of course, other fans, the other fans of teams who that would affect as well, you know, are sort of making their voices heard elsewhere and so on and so forth. And they get it back to 3-3. And then they push forward. And then Fulham, they leave the back door open and Fulham go up the other end and score. And it's 4-3. And they miss out on automatic promotion, go into the playoffs and lose the final of the playoffs to Norwich 2-0, and they didn't really turn up that day. And it's true, there are so many twists and turns, you can't take your eye off it for a moment. But of course, the nature of the championship is that one team or two teams or three teams, they can't dominate it, because the team who dominates it leaves straight away. So you always have this rotation of competition and the best teams in the league, which makes it so unpredictable and so exciting.
What I'm really interested to see this season, Spells, is how the playoffs unfold, because obviously the playoffs are big in any season, and even I, as someone who like detests the principle of the playoffs, I believe the three best teams should go up. And funnily enough, the last team to go up automatically in third was Wimbledon in 1986. Mm-hmm. Having been on the other side and enjoyed getting promoted through the playoffs, three times AFC Wimbledon, actually. I still think, on principle, it's wrong. But A, I understand the financial imperative, and B, it is totally thrilling. With the fact that football finances are kind of flattening with the current situation in the world at the moment, and due to the fact that people will be so glad to have football back, so many people will be so glad to have football back on television, are the playoffs going to be more intense than ever this season?
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it, to try and predict what will happen. I think it was, a number of people have expressed their concerns about the kind of fairness of things going forward. I think that, you know, Luton was certainly saying that we need to make sure everything's, you know, the protocols are fair and so on, because certain clubs may come up with clever little ways to make their stadium a little bit more intimidating despite fans than other teams. So everyone should just have a level playing field. I don't know how that would play out, you know. Maybe, you know, Fulham have, you know, cardboard cutouts of Mitrovic everywhere in the stands or something like that. I don't know. But I think that the you will always have the intensity with the playoffs. And so, I mean, just looking at the table now, I mean, it's tied, isn't it? You know, Brentford and Nottingham Forest on the same points. You know, so many teams can still nip in there.
I can't believe how close Millwall are. Completely escaped off my notice. Yeah.
Yeah, same with Cardiff City as well. You know, to even Blackburn Rovers, you know, just 3 points off. We could go on, but we'd get bogged down. But I think yourself or Luke were making the point on the continent when the Bundesliga was coming back. Who will respond better to the conditions, and that is very, very interesting, you know, because I mean, before the lockdown, you know, Preston North End had lost three league games on the trot. Now that doesn't mean anything now, because you know the form book has despite, was it Steve McManaman on the commentary for the Dortmund game in their first game back, you know, well, Dortmund are coming into this on good form. Well, nobody's got any form at the moment, you know. So we have no idea what will happen, but yeah, I think in terms of the intensity of the playoffs, it's so difficult to predict, because yes, it will, but it will. managers will have to make sure that they drum into their players that this is the same playoffs as it is last season, the season before, next season. Don't be fooled by there not being any fans there. Don't be fooled by, oh, well, let's just, you know, it's less of a cauldron, whether it be home or away or anything. You have to make sure that those players know what they're doing. This is the same football. This is the same. These are the same fixtures we would have played. They just don't have any fans there. But the one team that could benefit would be my own Fulham, because let's be honest, the home fans at the Cottage aren't exactly the most raucous, myself included in there. So they probably won't be affected as maybe other teams might be.
And it's the best time to play again, isn't it, in summer? Because I received a picture from a friend and colleague the other day showing how the Riverside stand has now totally gone. Can you imagine the gust off that in winter?
Well, I've walked down the other side of the river and I've seen sort of straight in there, and it is quite the sight to behold. I think in summer that kind of cooler breeze coming off the Thames might be quite nice, but yes, in the winter we very much hope that stand is up and running, or at least up, certainly. I think interesting what you said about the playoffs earlier, how the you know, Wimbledon were the last team to be automatically promoted in third. Of course, Fulham finished third in the 2017-18 season and went on to win the playoffs. You know, they just missed out 2 points off Cardiff in second. And I was a bit concerned. I thought that might affect Fulham's performance in the playoffs, because it can be very disappointing when you go into the last game of the season or the latter stages, where you can still be automatically promoted and you miss out, of course. But it didn't deter them in that season. They went on to win the playoffs, and Fulham are currently third in the table as well. So it will be interesting to see how it plays out, certainly.
We have 15 out of contract. We've got 6 loans and 9 of our own contracted players out. They finish in the end of June. And unfortunately for us, 3 of them players have said that they're not going to play.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Jules and Andy on Football Ramble Daily with me, Andy Brassel, and special guest substitute Marcus Speller, who's graciously stepped in for Jules today. Get in touch. We welcome your correspondence at Jules Bridge, at Andy Brassel, Jules and Andy at footballrambledaily.com. And we talk about emails being antiquated, but it turns out people love them, and you guys love them, and we love to receive them. So long may email live. Now, it's been a really really interesting and quite a kind of austere weekend in Europe, with a lot of headlines around Jadon Sancho and the way he reacted to his first goal against Paderborn for Borussia Dortmund at the weekend, revealing a message on his undershirt after removing his shirt saying "Justice for George Floyd." He wasn't the first player in the Bundesliga to speak up over events in the United States and police injustice this weekend. We saw Marcus Thuram of Borussia Mönchengladbach taking the knee after scoring against Union Berlin, and we saw the armband worn by Schalke's Weston McKennie, who is himself from Texas, saying "Justice for George" when they played Werder Bremen on Saturday. So earlier we spoke to Melissa Reddy, the senior football correspondent from The Independent, about her article that she wrote today about how younger footballers are moving away from that old trope of just stick to football. And I started by asking Melissa just how important Jadon Sancho's on-pitch message was.
I think it's been imperative that someone with Sancho's profile has spoken out. Obviously, he's only 20, but he's the most exciting young player in football at the moment. There's a lot of attraction around him because of the clubs that are linked with him, Manchester United, for example, Real Madrid. And because there's a lot of buzz around him and his performances, you know, over the last few seasons for Borussia Dortmund have been so electric, what he says matters. And it's not just about him speaking out, it's the moment he chooses to speak out. So he's making his first Bundesliga start since football's returned. He had a calf injury, so it's a big moment because he's starting. He scores his first goal of the afternoon. He reveals his shirt, "Justice for George Floyd." Okay, so there's attention on him because obviously the Bundesliga is the only league in the world, major league, that's being shown on TV. He scored, he's chosen not to celebrate, he's chosen to unveil that message. And then he goes on to score his first career hat-trick. He becomes the first English player to do so in a major league overseas for 31 years. And the first thought he has is to, you know, draw attention to Black Lives Matter. And what that's actually done is his hat-trick, this massive career moment for him, is no longer the talking point. His activism is what drew headlines. And that is major, 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 because he's chosen to detract attention away from personal accomplishment for the greater good, for the bigger message. And I think what was also so vital over the weekend was he wasn't the only young footballer to speak out. There's been Rian Brewster, Marcus Rashford, Marcus Thuram. This is bravery from players who haven't even turned 23 yet. And remember, football as a game and sport in general is conditioned really to be quiet, to just get on with the game. You know, stick to football is the message we are consistently told, and it's even indoctrinated into the laws of the game. So for these young men to take a stand is courageous, but also it's empowering for the younger generation to see their idols making a stand so that they can also feel like, you know, their voice is important too and follow suit.
I think that's really interesting, the point that it's younger players who are getting involved, and use the examples of Marcus Thuram, Rian Brewster, who we know has had to stand up for himself way before his time with what he's been through. But what's particularly interesting about Sancho, I mean, you mentioned Marcus Thuram, but in a way it's what we expect of him. I think partly because of his family name, because, you know, his dad has got a great history of standing up for social justice and human rights and against racism and against classism in France. But Sancho's different, isn't he? Because I think we tend to think, specifically if we look at the way people generally over, not necessarily in recent years, but certainly historically, we think of footballers from other countries being more politically interested than English footballers. So in that sense, is that why Sancho doing this is such a big deal as well?
I think perhaps that perception is erroneous, obviously. I think what we're seeing in terms of Sancho, Rashford, Brewster, is that the younger generation are very plugged into events around the world, are plugged into what's happening to people that look like them, who are less privileged, you know, who aren't, don't have a global audience, who aren't these talented megastars that are on big money. And sometimes, actually, these players get separated from their race because of their talent. And I think it's so instructive and so important that they are saying, hang on, no, this is about us. This affects all of us. We're black as well. It doesn't matter that I'm an exceptionally gifted player. I still am the race I am. What's happening in America to people who look like me still resonates with me. And often in the past, what we've seen some superstars do is actually detach themselves from these important issues. If people have been watching The Last Dance, Michael Jordan, for example, never really took a stand on any sort of political or social issue because that wasn't his brand. He stayed out of it. O.J. Simpson is a very famous case for always saying, I'm not black, I'm O.J. And yet during the trial of the century, uses his blackness then to get people on side, to get, you know, black Americans on side, and using just the history of race and the LAPD to actually, you know, get the not guilty verdict in that case. So for these players, as young as they are, you know, already as we always tend to think they're pampered and privileged and detached and, you know, it's all bling bling and they want the nice cars and they want to all these things. But for them to show, no, we are intelligent young men. We know what's going on. We feel what's going on. We relate to what's going on. We want to help. We want to force change. We want our voices to be part of this conversation is really, really pivotal, not just in a football sense, but in a wider community sense. Because if they're able to speak out, regardless of whatever action it will bring, which can often be hampers sponsorship deals, hampers future transfer moves they may be seen as problematic or too outspoken. It's an influence in terms of the laws of the game, you know, banning any sort of messaging. So there could be punishments in that regard. For them to ignore all that and think, no, it's crucial that I still speak up, I think is we should all be applauding it. We should be encouraging it. We should be saying that we need to see more of it. And actually, we should be holding these sort of players in a greater light than those who choose to stay silent because it benefits their brands and stuff.
Now, you talked about the laws of the game sort of making it difficult to make political statements or anything that might be perceived as a political statement. Now, the DFL of the Bundesliga have been looking into these protests over the weekend. The head of their disciplinary committee said that. I mean, there is precedent for them to use some sort of leeway, such as when Anthony Ujar in 2014 showed a message under his shirt in the wake of the Eric Garner killing, and they kind of turned a blind eye to that after he was celebrating a goal for Cologne, who he's playing for at the time. FIFA have talked about showing common sense, showing a bit of empathy, and maybe referees not applying the letter of the law. Do you think this could be a real turning point for players being able to express themselves on the field? Or is it just a flash in the pan? And is it just authorities saying, with the pandemic, we've got too much to deal with at the moment, so let's just let it go?
I think the laws of the game in general, in terms of that respect, needs to be reworked, because you're now saying to officials and to leagues, use your own judgment on this. And as we've seen with just any sort of decisions, when it's subjective, different people take different viewpoints. Now, you cannot have a referee, for example, deciding Sancho needs to get booked, but not booking Hakimi, who's also revealed the Justice for George Floyd shirt in the same sort of match. There's no continuity. But also, you cannot have laws that tell a player how they can express themselves when something is so emotive. Racism is not a political issue, or it's not some slogan that players are slapping. It's an important disease that needs to be eradicated. You can't tell these players that they can't feel enough about it to put messaging on their shirts. And so I think the laws of the game, there definitely needs to be a reworking of that. But apart from that, I think that players that haven't been put off by the stir of them speaking out, what that could lead to, I think should encourage those that maybe feel like just staying, maybe not silent, but just not having an opinion at all is safe. I think they should be encouraged to see that actually, no, it's not safe. It's not okay to be quiet. It's not okay to not use your platform. It's not okay to not be an ally. Because one of the strongest things I've seen so far is Liverpool's, collective taking off the knee of the whole squad. And how that came about is, Virgil van Dijk and Gini Wijnaldum were talking about doing something, and the squad said, no, we don't want our black players to stand alone. We don't want, this is not just your fight. This is our fight. It's a collective thing. And so they've done it together. And as much as it's been so brilliant to see these individuals, these young men coming out and making a statement, it's so much stronger if their teammates join in, and if, football as a whole and sport as a whole, and then everything has like a domino effect. Once people feel comfortable and encouraged, and they feel like their message will also be heard, or their opinion also matters, it just spirals. And this is how you affect change. So I think if we see a greater collective try in this respect with Black Lives Matter, and then any other issues we have going forward, it would force change in a quicker, more emphatic way.
Melissa Reddy there, joining us from The Independent. Thanks to her for giving us some of her time. It's an issue that's been absolutely inescapable in the news over the weekend, Marcus. And it does, as Melissa was saying, represent a huge sea change, really. The fact that not just football is a stepping up and talking about a social issue, but young footballers are doing that. How important, especially for young black British players, has it been for that Raheem Sterling has kind of put his head above the parapet in the last couple of years and encouraged them not to stay silent and find their voice?
Yeah, I think Sterling has received a lot of praise over his kind of words and actions in recent seasons, as you say. And it shows. I mean, he has made, you would have thought he has made a difference in the way people would conduct themselves at this time. And in terms of the overall feeling of what's been going on, you mentioned it feels a bit of a sea change. It does feel differently this time. And it feels, I mean, the Melissa mentioned it herself about the whole Liverpool team doing that you know, the photo of them all going down on one knee. This does feel differently, and it is obviously long overdue, but it's been good to see the reaction of certain people, and in the case of Liverpool, certain teams in the footballing community. So yeah, we thoroughly recommend you read Melissa's piece on this, because as you can tell, you know, she's very, very informed and articulate when it comes to this kind of thing. Well, and other things, of course, but this, she's very worth listening to for sure.
Yeah, strongly recommended. We're going to finish up with some of your correspondence, as always. And Marcus, well, you've always got your hand in the mailbag. So is there anything at the top that might be of a Jules and Andy persuasion?
Well, that wasn't proved, Andy, with regards to my hand being in the mailbag, but we'll crack on nonetheless. And I've been handed this an email from Damien, who says, "Hey guys, I have a novel idea about helping lower league teams survive during the pandemic and beyond. If next season all games have to be played behind closed doors, then why don't teams create an e-season ticket solution with single game tickets as well? You pay like you would with normal with your normal season ticket or a single ticket, and are given a code. You put that code into a website and you can watch the games you have paid for. Also, like a normal season ticket, you can pay a little bit extra for away games. I understand this won't be the same as going to the match in person. As a Liverpool fan living in Ireland, I don't get to go to Anfield as much as I would want, but I do go and support my local team, Derry City, as well, and I know how important match revenue is to small clubs." So that's from Damien. He also says, "Jules, appreciate Jules isn't here, but I'm sure she'll hear this, Damien. Jules, I used to play underage football against Shane Duffy, and he's as tough as he looks." So it's good to have confirmation on that. But with regards to the e-tickets, Andy, e-season tickets and e-tickets, what do you think of that? Because that's something I've not heard of, and Damien might be onto something.
Well, I think there's kind of a starting point for that with the iFollow scheme that football league clubs have. And basically what it is mainly aimed at expat supporters, I think, of various football league clubs. And you can, for, I think it's a tenner, you can access a live feed of your team's game. It's how overseas owners watch their teams, for example. And we've got more and more of those in the lower divisions now. We've seen that at Bristol Rovers, for example, in the last little while. And what they've done for midweek matches is they've made them accessible to fans in the UK as well. So yeah, some would say the infrastructure and the precedent is there. Then again, anyone who's actually used the service would say that the infrastructure really isn't there. There's no production value to it, really. It's just a one camera view, and yeah, you know, it's not ideal. You might be better off with your mate with a camera phone, give or take the load on 4G and rights issues, which are two quite major issues when it comes to that sort of thing. But I really like the idea. I do wonder, we've seen teams in Germany, for example, have virtual tickets in that fans have contributed to for a ticket for a match that's already happened, for example. You know, the idea of, you know, we all chip in a little bit and it offers something towards the club. If we're talking about it from a purely financial standpoint, I'm not sure there's the level of TV production to give the supporters a proper product. Now, maybe people who live overseas and watch football league teams on a regular basis disagree with me, and, you know, maybe a lot of fans just are not bothered about that sort of stuff and take anything they could get, and I appreciate that. And if that is your view, well, just get in touch with us at the email addresses and on Twitter, as you know you can. But I mean, would you pay a tenner to watch Fulham remotely?
Yeah, I think if I I mean, you know, Fulham are owned by a billionaire, so it's a little bit of a different situation. I think if I supported a club, I might do. I might well do, but I think if it was a more pressing issue, if I thought they were going to go to the wall or something like that, then I might do that. So I understand Damien's point about lowly clubs, especially those who really need the money. So I do worry about the sort of the production values, as you say. I mean, they do have cameras at all league grounds during normal match days anyway, but that does mean during this pandemic, if you don't have fans there, you are asking a lot of people to go to work who may not want to, or maybe they do, I don't know. So it's certainly an idea worth exploring. Whether it would work in practice or not, I don't know, but yeah. I think it's worth exploring.
Talking of televising from football league grounds, I think one thing, I mean, I don't think it will really come to it with League One looking unlikely to restart, but we were talking about the chill coming off the Thames at Craven Cottage with the Riverside stand no longer there. I think probably the coldest place in football, give or take Oldham Athletic, which obviously has an altitude advantage, would probably be the gantry at King's Meadow, which also looks quite rickety. I mean, that's definitely better experienced in summer than in winter. Obviously a moot point because Wimbledon have, to all intents and purposes, started to move out of King's Meadow, as it looks as if League One is coming to a close. On the back of that, we've got one from Matthew Kermode here that says, hi, Jules and Andy. Thank you, firstly, for keeping the podcast going. They're great for my evening walks. It's an absolute pleasure, Matthew. While I was out this evening, Wednesday, you were talking about the finances of football. I'm no accountant by any means, but is professional football genuinely financially sustainable? What would happen if every club was told to balance their books? Could it be done? I hear a lot of talk about how rich clubs are, but in reality, aren't most of them actually massively in debt? Well, Matthew, it's funny you should ask that, because when we talk about the financing of football and how it all really works, we've just released a Football Ramble Daily Book Club with me, Kate Mason and Luke Moore, where we get into some of those issues. It's really worth reading the book as well. It will give you a whole new perspective on football finance and how it really works. And it does bring into question, the authors bring into question, whether football really does qualify as big business. We're always hearing, it's one of the ultimate football cliches, isn't it, that football is big business nowadays. But that they put it into some sort of perspective with the corporate and commercial world. And you can get an e-copy of the book for just a couple of pounds off online retailers. I would strongly recommend it. And of course, it's a book that evolves as well. There have been several different editions of it, and they sort of critique their previous work. But you can hear all about that on the book club, which is available on the Football Ramble Daily feed now. Well, thank you as always again for your correspondence. Like we said, you can get in touch at Jules Breach, at Andy Brassel, and Jules and Andy at footballrambledaily.com. Jules, we wish you all the best, and we hope you're feeling better soon. Much love from all involved with the Ramble, but thanks so much for joining us, Marcus Speller.
My pleasure. My bloody pleasure, Andy Brassel.
And of course, Marcus, we'll reconvene for the mailbag for patreon.com subscribers later in the week, where you can pose us further questions, and we'll get it the right way round this time in terms of who's asking and who's answering. Do you want your chair back, basically?
I really do, Andy. This one's not nearly as comfy.
It's difficult to reach a mailbag from that chair as well, isn't it? I mean, you've had to really almost pop your shoulder out of your socket, haven't you? And we really appreciate you doing that. He would do anything for you, Ramblers. Hopefully, Jules Breach will be fighting fit for next week here on Jules and Andy. In the meantime, this week's Ramble Meets is me chatting to Southampton captain Pierre-Emile Højbjerg, who's absolutely fascinating, on his football upbringing at Bayern and how he's evolved into a Premier League captain on the South Coast. That's it for this week. We wish you all a great week, and we'll see you again next Tuesday.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.